metaphysical question, but it's also, it's directly in our lives because we're living in diverse times and the emerging diversity or the emerging awareness. We've always been in diverse times, but I think things are less siloed and there's people being courageous enough to be living visibly more, and there's more space for them to do so. And so we need practice, I think, meeting the other and celebrating the potential of incorporating their way of being into our way of being.
Can you handle all this in a short stage show? It's a huge concept.
I agree. I don't think that I'm trying to convince anybody of anything or arrive at a conclusion. I want to open up a place to examine these ideas. And the other access point, in addition to deaf audience members, is multi-generational viewers. And so I think a question is, what is the space where four-year-olds and elders and everyone in between can look upon something together and have something in common there, or have the diversities of what they're experiencing be held in a container? I think live performance can do that. I think we can do that in a half hour.
Yeah, and without words, I mean, are people going to really get... Are they not going to get a message? What do you think they're going to get? That's the feeling?
You know, who goes to theater? What will they get out of it? I mean, they'll be out of the house. We're agreeing to be objects in front of them. And so we have an agreement already that they're going to come see something and we're going to show them something. So what they get out of it is a bit on them. But what I'm putting into it is a great deal of care and consideration for their point of view. So I think that they will be finding humor. I think they will be finding wonder The other thing about the other is it's wonderful. It's fascinating. And so what I'm hoping is that what they'll get is a chance to be delighted together. One thing I've noticed when doing things that are supposed to be funny is that if you just have elders, certain things will land and certain things won't, and you won't always get a huge momentum of humor going. But when you introduce 4 and 5 year olds in there who are giggling at things, everybody starts to laugh together and you get a different way of being together by being together. And so I think that's what the audience gets if they come, is they get to be together.
Mm-hmm. So the other Echo Theater show is called Underneath, and it's based on a folk tale.
Yes. So for the last 4 Fertile Grounds, what Echo has presented is multiple companies at the intersection of circus arts, movement, and narrative, addressing similar questions. So Tempo's Contemporary Circus is their own company, and they're also looking at the idea of what is essential for us to be examining. So they are presenting work around an old Inuit folktale called Skeleton Woman, and they're using a lot of, I believe it's called Icarian Games, which is the partner acrobatics where you throw and launch people, and they have an underwater and above water portion of their show.
How did they do that?
You'll have to come see.
They're going to build a tank?
I'm not actually in their production. My understanding is that they're using a screen behind which they can pitch people who will rise and fly out of the water and back in, and there will be a projection element. I think they're also using some large puppetry components. They're also using an aerial bungee in addition to our show. So lots of components. I think we're both really interested in any tool that helps get you to this new place.
Can you say anything about the Inuit myth? Do you know much about it?
My understanding of Skeleton Woman is a story of a fisherman who finds the remains of a village elder who has been cast off. And when he draws her bones up out of the ocean, he brings them home and lives with them. And by living with them and their wisdom, slowly the woman who owned the bones comes back and brings her wisdom with her. So I think it's about finding meaning and guidance from the wisdom of the past.
Can you generalize about the sort of circus arts scene in Portland? I know it's always been pretty strong. Is it aging out now?
It appears to be very strong. When I began working for DoJump, which was the resident company at Echo 22 years ago, there weren't as many places. I think that was the only place at that time. And then Cirque du Soleil came upon the cultural consciousness, and it just started to explode everywhere. So there's quite a few, more than I can name, companies offering some kind of circus experience from Circus Project to AWOL. And the circus has always been a place for marginalized communities to have a go at being included and involved and maybe even appreciated. And so I think circus art still offers that to people. One thing that has continued to happen is what I consider is the fetishization of athleticism. And I think the challenge for circus artists and people sharing circus is to allow us to see lots of ourselves up there and that to close the distance between the virtuosic performer and the receiving viewer.
So it's not just pretty people.
Well, the circus has always had kind of two camps, I think. There's been the big top and the sideshow. And I think one thing we've seen more and more in the last few years is a blending of these aesthetics. I think also, you know, circus tends to be spectacle-based, or it has been historically. And I think a big shift in circus arts is that it's trying to engage with narrative. It's trying to find how to present something not just as itself, but as part of a larger thing.
Mm-hmm.
We'll be presenting Essentials at Echo Theater on the 25th, 26th, and 27th of January, and the 1st, 2nd, and 3rd of February. And we're trying to make it accessible to people of all ages, so there's a number of times. And information can be found on our website at echotheaterpdx.org.
Thanks a lot. Bill Wadhams, you are the composer in a musical theater piece based on the Vortex Music Festival. Vortex One?
Well, the Vortex, yeah. The Vortex One Music Festival that happened in 1970 is really just a part of the story. It's everything that happened around that. Really, the main event that we're depicting is that there were Vietnam War protests in 1970 all across the United States, and in 1969, Woodstock happened. And the Vortex concert was meant to be a Woodstock of the West. But the American Legion was coming to town in 1970 to hold their convention, and Nixon was going to be their keynote speaker. So that became a magnet for activists from all over the country to come to Portland to oppose them. And so Kent State happened on May 4th, and students were shot at Kent State. On May 11th, in the park blocks in Portland, there was a protest that ended in violence, number of people going to the hospital. That's where our play begins, that event. And and then right after that, the FBI comes to Tom McCall and says, Nixon's coming to town with the American Legion, and we're expecting 50,000 protesters. How are we going to handle this? How are we going to get through this without a lot of violence? And McCall was up for re-election that year, so there was a lot at stake for a lot of people around that. And so our musical is not so much about the concert itself. It's about everything around the events happening in 1970 in Oregon.
But wasn't Vortex put on as a kind of distraction? It was to get people out of town?
That's right. It was, and that's part of the story that we tell, is that the activists were split. They were divided. Some of them were very excited about putting on a concert, and the people that were pushing that idea were saying, we can get Santana, we can get Cream, we can get Big Brother and the whole, you know. They thought, we can get big stars, we're going to have a huge Woodstock-type concert. The other camp within the activists was saying, we need to be downtown, we need to be facing off with we need to make our voices heard right where the action is downtown Portland. So when they were given MacGyver Park out in Estacada, there were a lot of activists that were saying, this is a ploy to get us out of town, and we won't go for it. And so, there was a split within that camp, and we're depicting that in the characters that we have in our story.
Mm-hmm. So what actually happened? I know the festival happened. Did a load of people stay behind and
Some people did stay behind. A lot of people went out to the festival. thankfully, it didn't erupt into a big violent protest. The business people were worried that they'd be smashing windows out and all sorts of things like that, and so a lot of business people in town actually contribute to the cost of the concert. They flew in wood, water, food, you know, out to the concert site to keep people going out in that direction. But it was fortunate that there's a happy ending here, at least in terms of a peaceful, relatively peaceful result.
What kind of music do you make for a musical about a rock festival?
Well, you know, the writer of the book and lyrics, Sumac, is a very prominent writer here in town.
And yeah, and people would know her for Yellow Wallpaper. What else?
Also, she wrote The Lost Boy, which played at Artist Rep Theater, and A Noble Failure, which was at Third Rail, some other place. But I approached her a few years ago, asking her if she would be interested in writing a musical with me, and we meandered around about an idea until she presented the idea of the story of the Vortex. And when she said 1970 Vietnam War protests, that really resonated with me, because in 1970 I was in my senior year in high school, playing in rock bands, going to concerts of all these people that they said they were trying to get at the Vortex. I mean, I was so into music and rocking out, and I happened to be in the Washington, D.C. suburbs of Maryland, so I was going to Vietnam War protests at the Washington Monument. So I feel like when she said that, that era, I immediately felt a visceral attachment to it, and that's kind of my wheelhouse, if you will, from mm-hmm. where I came from.
Mm-hmm. So you've been composing with a band or just on your own?
Well, I have a home studio, and what I would do is Sue would send me, you know, she's been writing this over the last couple of years, and she would send me a scene, and I'd look at it, and I'd look at the lyrics, and I'd understand what's going on. Like this first scene, we're in the park blocks, there's protesters, and then the cops are coming in, and so I wanted the protesters to come out sounding like a combination of Jefferson Airplane and Cream. And I knew exactly what that sounds like. And so, and then her lyrics, I mean, the words that she's given me are very powerful. Mm-hmm. It's been a thrill to write music to these words. And some of them I can't say on the air. Here you told us not to swear. So, but the activists are, you know, they're riled up, man, and they're yelling. And
Is Sue writing actual song lyrics without music and handing them off to you?
Yeah, and Sue, I think in conversations with Sue, perhaps somewhere along the line in her life, she's written a few song lyrics, but it's not really, no, this is kind of new for her, I think. And so when she first started sending lyrics to me, they didn't necessarily fall into, you know, 4-bar, 8-bar, 12-bar rhymes. They kind of broke out of that. And at first I was like, oh my gosh, I'm going to have to retool this in order to fit them into the format that I'm kind of used to. But I decided to try very hard to just really get how she wanted this to come across. And I found the more that I busted out of my own sort of square boxes of preconceived notions, then all of a sudden it became much more original to me, and it made more exciting to me, and I started to really hear the voices of the people that she was depicting. So it's not, I think that if you were, when you sit down and if you hear this performance, I don't think, I mean, it's still, I come from rock and roll and pop music, and it's still filtered through that lens or you know, microphone, but if you actually analyzed it, it's busting out of conventions, I think.
Mm-hmm. So if anyone Googles Bill Wadhams, they're going to find Animotion.
Right.
And a very catchy hit song from the 80s, Obsession.
Right.
Which I loved. And I actually thought it was Human League for a long time.
A lot of people thought that. A lot of people thought it was Human League. As a matter of fact, so we play on that. When we play in concert, we will often sing Don't You Want Me, Baby. Which, you know,
oh,
so
really?
Yeah.
You just
because I'm singing with a woman, why not?
Sure, yeah.
You know, Astrid Plain.
But for this, you're going back to like the 70s.
Yeah, and you know what? When I got to Los Angeles, I was rocking and rolling in the vein of my 70s rock heroes, and it wasn't until a record producer came to my band and said, "We want you to record this song called Obsession," which had been in a roller disco movie called A Night in Heaven.
Okay.
So I was kind of like thrust into synth pop, whereas that really wasn't where I was coming from.
Mm-hmm.
And so, so at any rate, I've spent the last 35 years trying to evolve beyond that song, you know, but we just got off of our biggest 80s tour in 30 years with Flock of Seagulls and Wang Chung, and we had a blast. So so many people who in a way kind of want to leave the 80s behind, at this point we've kind of given in to the fact that it's a lot of fun and a lot of people, it's a shared experience for a lot of people, so we do that. But coming back to the musical that we're doing now, it doesn't sound like 80s music at all. And I want to mention that Tom McCall is really one of our central characters. And Leif Norby is going to play him, a wonderful local actor. And as we were trying to figure out what would the voice of Tom McCall sound like when he starts singing, I was looking at the charts in 1970, and I kind of played with the idea of him being Tom Jones. It's not unusual, you know, not going to do that. I thought about Elton John. I thought about, you know, Neil Diamond, and ultimately settled on more of a jazzy voice, not from the 70s, but a little bit earlier, because that's Tom McCall was really a fan of jazz. So that's when I called my friend Tom Grant, who's a wonderful jazz pianist. And I said, "Tom, I've written this music to these lyrics that Sue wrote. For example, there's a song called Political Suicide, where Tom McCall is realizing if he allows this concert to go on and allows people to get naked and smoke pot and drink and everything out there at the park, it could be the end of his political career." So I'd written it kind of almost Elton Johnny-like, because I can do that. And then I called Tom Grant and I said, I pushed it off to him and I said, "You please take what I've written on piano and put Tom Grant on it." And he sent it back, and I was practically in tears. I was so happy with it. So Tom Grant will be in our band at our performance on January 28th at the Mission Theater. So he's very much a part of this.
Fertile Ground is 75 events and 120 acts of creation. Nicole, just tell us a little bit more about what people can find out in advance.
Well, in advance, if you really want to get a sense of the festival, you can go to the website. And on the site, there's a section called 2019 Works. So all the works are listed there. Our festival is really vast. And you can go to the website and check it out. That's www.fertilegroundpdx.org. We are, again, celebrating our 10th year, and we are a program of the Portland Area Theater Alliance. So we are really under their umbrella to produce this work. This festival is really amazing because it covers everything from autism to ADHD to the aging process. It covers topics of homelessness, guns, everything from vampires to Frankenstein musical. It is talks about immigration. There are stories from incarcerated youth. And there's even two stories that involve sirens, as in like the kind off the coast.
Oh yeah,
singing a, people, singing marine men to their death.
There's a grunge version of the Little Mermaid set in Coos Bay.
Yes, the Sirens of Coos Bay. It is a really amazing, diverse festival. We've got new producers. We've got old producers or returning. They're not old. They're returning producers. But I'm really excited that Passion Art has decided to be in this year's festival with Hazardous Beauty, which was something that I believe it was last year. It's a Bonnie Ratner play that they are mounting as a fully staged world premiere this year. So that's very exciting. Josie Seed is directing that. Chapel Theater has joined Fertile Ground this year. We have a 16-year-old who is writing and producing and in a play called Leaving Manzanita. I think it's our youngest producer ever. There are so many new producers this year. It's really, really an exciting thing to watch people feel like it's a safe place to come try new creative work.
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, there are returning people like Portland or PDX Playwrights, excuse me. They have 10 events. 27 playwrights are involved in those 10 events. Fuse Theater is producing 4 world premiere events. Linestorm, you can do Linestorm for lunch almost every day. They're at Artist Rep noon with free lunchtime readings. Groove and Greenhouse, that's the big dance feature of Fertile Ground. They have brought together 15 different groups. Every night it's like 3 or 4 different groups.
Dance groups?
Yeah, dance groups. Dance and performing all forms of dance. So it's a really beautiful opportunity to get a little sampling of all the dance people who are doing dance in the city that you probably don't know about. Lakewood Theater is again hosting a host of readings, and there's so many. I mean, there are 75 shows. I can't possibly talk about all of them, although I would love to. The Deep End Theater is back in. And they do improvisational theater, which is not the same as like improv comedy. It's a different kind of theater, but highly recommend just getting a sense of that with presence. Portland Story Theater is back with another armchair adventure. Lawrence Howard and Shackleton. His Shackleton Stories. The Portland Civic Theater Guild is presenting Rich Rubin's Shakespeare's Skull. And that he is an incredible writer, and so that's going to be interesting to watch. Live on Stage, the sellouts always with their mini musicals. They're back. Northwest Children's Theater is back for the first time in a few years. They are doing, I think it's called The Starlings Present the Dinosaurs or something like that, but it's for kids. But it's I'm really excited to have Northwest Children's Theater back, and we talked about, you know, Echo Theater coming back. We've got the animation series Homebrew back again this year. They just do one show, and it always just is sells out really quickly because it's a whole bunch of Portland animators doing mm-hmm. little shorts.
Oh yeah, and they're doing an alphabet, so each person gets a few frames to deal with a letter, and the whole animation runs about, I don't know, a few seconds long.
Yeah, it's just fun to see what people think of when they're thinking of how to put a show onto Fertile Ground and make it interesting.
Mm-hmm.
And it can just be like, oh, I wrote this and I want somebody to see it. Or they put that kind of really concerted thought into curating that special genre that they're doing.
Mm-hmm. Do you think it's easy now in 2019 to be in theater in Portland? Sounds like, I don't know, technology makes it easy. You don't need to buy a lot of gear to record or to video, and you know, you could just rent a space somewhere. But then on the other hand, the city's growing and there aren't those cheap warehouse spaces anymore.
That's a really big question, Joseph.
You seem to have gathered a lot of people.
Yes, but there is nothing ever easy about producing theater at all. And whether you're talking about what the art is or finding a theater space, but particularly finding audience, those are things that there's plenty of amazing artists out there producing amazing work that doesn't get seen by enough people.
Mm-hmm.
And that the artists have, even in Fertile Ground, I mean, these producers have to find their own spaces. They have to fund their own performances, they have to pay or not pay or somehow compensate their actors, designers. So there's it's a labor of love for sure. Mm-hmm. And if more people would get out there and see how awesome our scene is, then it would be easier.
I'm Joseph Galliman, standing in for Dimay Roberts. You're listening to Stage and Studio. Our show this week was about Fertile Ground, which is a festival of new works. It runs January 24th to February the 3rd. Everything you need to know is at fertilegroundpdf.org. Thanks this week to my guests, Nicole Lane, the festival director, Bill Wadhams, Samson Searoth, Aaron Wheeler Kay, and Jessica Wallenfels. Thanks for coming into KBOOT.
Foundation and KBOO would like to invite you to the 34th anniversary and tribute to the Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. entitled We've Come This Far, Keep Alive the Dreams. On Monday, January 21st, 2019, from 11 a.m. until 6 p.m. at the Highland Christian Center, 7600 Northeast Gleason Street. There'll be a host of civic leaders, choirs, the Jefferson Dancers, and of course, our own Victory Village Marketplace. Again, keep alive the dream. Monday, January 21st from 11 a.m. until 6 p.m. at the Highland Christian Center, 7600 Northeast Gleason, presented by the World Arts Foundation and broadcast live by KBOO Community Radio.
KBOO Community Radio is proud to co-sponsor Judge Torres, running January 10th to 19th at the Milagro Theater in Portland. Judge Torres is a modern-day fairy tale rooted in Salvadoran folklore. Xiomara Torres faces many obstacles in her turbulent journey crossing the border, maneuvering the U.S. foster care system, missing her family, aging out, and becoming the most recent Latinx judge in Multnomah County, Oregon. This is her story. Again, that's Judge Torres, running January 10th through 19th, weekly on Thursday, Friday, and Saturday at 7:30 p.m. and Sunday at 2 p.m. at the Milagro Theater, 525 Southeast Stark Street in Portland. More information is available at kbu.fm on the right-hand side of the homepage under Community Events.
Así que vamos a delirar, deliremos por un ratito.
Muy buenas tardes, bienvenidas y bienvenidos a la programación en español que se transmite por la radio comunitaria de KBOO. Estamos dando inicio al programa de Buscando América a través de las ondas radiales del 90.7 FM en Portland, el 104.3 en Corvallis y el 91.9 en Hood River. Bienvenidas y bienvenidos también a las y los que nos escuchan a través de internet en cualquier parte del mundo por kbu.fm. Y yo soy Tania Gómez Daza y los invito a que nos acompañen hasta la 1:30 de la tarde, hoy en este martes 15 de enero. En el programa de hoy